Blog Talk Radio.
This is former WWF ring announcer Michael Porter, and you're listening to False Count Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of False Count Radio. As always, I'm your host, the Pacific Coast player, JT Evans. Tonight, alongside my co-host, as always, Andrew Carluck. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you tonight, JT?
I am doing wonderful. As a matter of fact, we have a very special guest on the line with us tonight. He is former GWF Global Wrestling Federation and former World Wrestling Federation superstar and the owner of Big Bully Nutrition. On the line with us, we have Big Bully Busick. How are you doing?
Andrew, JT, what's happening? Let's see, you're on the West Coast, Andrew's on the East Coast, and I'm up in beautiful Steubenville, Ohio. What life is good.
Definitely. Now, you know, we've got a list of questions. Fans have sent us in some questions, so if you don't mind, let's go ahead and get started.
All right, let's have at it, guys.
Now, of course, the first question is a generic question, as always. Growing up, were you a wrestling fan? If so, who'd you look up to?
I was the biggest wrestling fan you ever seen in your life. It started back in Pittsburgh. They had a Saturday night, 6 p.m. It was called Studio Wrestling. The host was Chili Billy, Bill Cardell, and this was the era when Bruno was coming into his reign, and certainly Bruno was a guy that I actually looked up to in growing up, and yeah, I was a huge fan. I mean, a huge fan.
Now, I take it you probably went to the shows. You know, did you get the chance to mingle with Bruno? Of course, you know, back in the day, they were, you know, huge superstars. Nowadays, it's a little easier for fans to get to him. But back then, you know, it was harder. Did you ever get the chance to meet him?
Well, I mean, it's not as if Bruno's a whole bunch older than I am. But you figure if I was 12, Bruno, I don't know what Bruno's age is. But, you know, he was already an adult. So, you know, as I grew up and Bruno's career progressed, you know, it went up through my teen years and up into the 20s until I started in the business. But I did not get a chance to actually mingle with him, but I was the truest sense of a mark that I would follow. I would look for his training habits and his training routines. And then there was other wrestlers in the area. There was Johnny DeFazio, Jumping Johnny DeFazio, Dominic DiNucci, Baron Cicluna. These are all guys that I grew up watching. Little would I know that I would wind up in the ring with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, before actually training to become a professional wrestler, you were an active police officer. What was that like, and what made you decide that, you know, hey, I'm going to become a professional wrestler?
Well, you know, we could even go back a little further than that, because professional wrestling played such an influence on me as a child growing up that I fell in love with the sport in itself. You know, I wrestled in high school and I wrestled in college, and thanks to the influence of Bruno, I became a very active power lifter. Well, my first competition was a bodybuilder, but that just didn't go over real well, and I jumped right into powerlifting, and then I had the wrestling in high school. And then I became a cop, actually, when I was... I just turned 19 years old. They say I may have been the first cop in the United States to be hired under 21. I don't know.
Oh, wow. That's actually a good accomplishment. You know, my next question for you is, of course, you know, back then in those days, wrestling training was a lot harder than these days, where they just throw somebody in the ring nowadays. Can you describe to our listeners what your training was like?
Well, I don't know if you might not have that backwards. I mean, certainly... By the time I went into the ring, there was a fellow here who was actually from Steubenville, Ohio. His name was Mike Padusis. And Mike was visiting his family, and I grabbed him because there was some influence family ties in the area, because Steubenville is not a big area, but the whole Pittsburgh tri-state area consisted of all steel mill towns. And in each town, there was 20,000, 30,000 people. So Mike was from Steubenville. And I just trapped him, and I says, "Look, I want to learn how to wrestle professionally." And you know, at that time, I didn't know the business. And no, kid, you're not going to do that, this, that, and the other. And if you don't know Mike Padusis, I would encourage everybody to go ahead and do a Google search on him and take a look at this guy, because he certainly it was his key influence. I flew to, he went back home to Dallas, Texas. He was living in Dallas, and I talked him into it. My daughter was just about born. She wasn't born yet. And I talked him into it, and there was another fellow down there. My ethnic background is I'm Serbian, and there was another fellow by the name of Danny Plecic. So I had a little bit, he was Serbian, so between the Greek and the Serbian connection, they taught me how to tie up and take a headlock and ship me back to Pittsburgh after calling Gorilla Monsoon and booked me in Pittsburgh Civic Arena.
Oh, wow. See, the reason I asked that is because we've interviewed a lot of different people, and a lot of people say that their training back then was a lot tougher. You know, it was a lot more solid on the contact, and you know, from experience, just working shows, I've been on shows with guys that have been in training for 2 weeks, learned exactly how to lock up, and then that was it. They were in the ring.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much my story, and the guys. Now, don't forget, back in those days. Well, I had a wrestling background, or what is commonly known as being a shooter. But the guys that I was in the ring with, I had the appearance because of my powerlifting background. Evidently, that played a big influence because these guys would continue, when I say these guys, certainly the influence of Dominic Benucci, Bruno, Gorilla Monsoon, they would continue to book me. And that's how I would learn. I remember for the first 6 or 7 years walking into the locker room and Cicluna or one of Johnny Valiant or one of those guys would say, "Oh, who's got the kid tonight? Who's got the crowbar?" You know what I mean? So that the first 6, 7 of my years was when they used local talent, and those guys were good enough to continue to book me, and I started learning the business that way. As far as any formal training, one of the Mongols had a little training camp up in outside of Pittsburgh, and Dominic had some training camps up that I went to from there.
All right. Now, your debut match was against Billy Red Lions. Can you share your memories of that match?
Yes, it was. Well, imagine, like I said, you come back from the airplane. Next thing you know, you're booked. Mike had given me an old pair of wrestling boots, and I'd got a pair of wrestling tights, and I'll never forget walking out in front of 15,000 people and saying, "Oh, my God, what am I doing?" And when I walked into that ring, I was scared to death. And Billy Red Lions got me through the whole match. There was a referee there by the name of Izzy Moydell, and another guy that I'd watched growing up. And, they got me through the match probably. What I remember most about that match was certainly the match was terrible. I mean, it had to be, just knowing what I know today. But Billy Red Lions whipped me into a turnbuckle so hard that I distinctly remember that part of the match. But I got through it, and like I said, they continued to book me.
Okay, and during your time when you were in New Jersey and Pennsylvania territories, there's a lot of stories that guys were complaining that you were too stiff in the ring. Do you have any reaction to that?
Well, I was. I mean, and it wasn't intentional. I mean, don't forget, I come from a wrestling background, and I to work what's called loose or whatever. I remember Cicluna kicked me right in the face one night. He was so mad at me because I shot in and did a single leg on him. And I mean, I took him down, and it wasn't that I was trying to be a smart, you know what? It was just that's what I did, and everything I did was stiff until I continued to learn.
Okay, and in 1984, you left pro wrestling for a while and returned back to active duty with the with law enforcement. What was your reason at the time for completely leaving the wrestling business?
Well, now, I was a cop up here in the Pittsburgh area from 73 to 83, and that's when they used what was called local talent. So I always used the wrestling as my side income. I stayed in law enforcement and transferred to Atlanta PD, or Metro Atlanta, and that's where I wound up meeting Jerry Blackwell and people that Jerry Blackwell, Abdul the Butcher, Dick Slater, Mr. Wrestling 2. That's when I got my so-called push. Jerry Blackwell more or less took me under his wing, and that style, when you talk about working stiff, that's what I was comfortable with, because when you talk about working with the Jerry Blackwells, Abdullah the Butchers, Bruiser Brodies, it was a brawl. It was stiff. And wrestling too, you know, if I didn't mention these guys, I would be negligent, because they played a huge influence on giving me my actual first push. So back to the question, did I leave law enforcement? I never left law enforcement until I actually went to the WWF, the now WWE.
Now, my next question for you, of course, is how did the Big Bully Busick character come about, and whose idea was it?
Well, you know, it's actually kind of funny, because I knew, like when we started this interview, and you guys are around the business, and whoever's listening, certainly they love the business also. I knew if I was ever going to make it in the business, you know, it was time for me to attempt to do something. Certainly my type of physique, you know, to dye my hair blonde or go with any type of gimmick like that certainly wouldn't work. So what I had done is I made a list of wrestlers that had my type of physical stature. Bulldog Breyer, Crush Lazowski, Bruno, guys with that type of physical structure. And then I came back to my old setting here in the Pittsburgh area, in the tri-state area, and I had mentioned earlier the steel mill towns. Well, you got to understand, in these steel mill towns, there was a shot and beer joint on every corner, if not two or three, in all these cities. And I made a list of the characters from the years that I was a cop up here, because it was Friday and Saturday night at the fights. I mean, these guys would get drunk and the fights were on. So I made a list of these guys and what their mannerisms were and their characteristics. And most of them had a mustache, smoked a cigar, and wore a hat. So I incorporated that into it. And then I watched some Warner Brother cartoons, and I came up with this character, and that was the look. I just didn't know what to name the character. And Joe Pedicino had taken over Georgia Wrestling and after Jerry had it. And Joe said to me, "You just described a bully." And thus, you got Big Bully Busick.
Oh, okay.
And that's when we were getting ready to, they were working on putting the GWF together at that time.
Now, I'm glad you actually brought that up, because that was leading into my next question. Now, of course, while you were with the Global Wrestling Federation, you got the chance of working against Chaz Taylor. A lot of people feel that he never got the push that he deserved. What are your memories of working with him?
Well, Chaz was great. I remember Chaz, you know, Shawn Michaels used to, when he was down in Georgia, he always used to say, "Loosen up, brother." And I knew that Chaz was going to work similar to the way Shawn did. And so he was very good to work with, type of guy you could stay in the ring with for hours. So my memories are all good of Chaz.
Now, of course, you know, and you even stated this on your Facebook page, you had a match with Bruiser Brody, and during the match you guys brawled outside and the cops were called. What was the reason behind that, and what are your memories of that match?
No, that was with Abdullah the Butcher.
Oh, okay.
There was a match, one match with Brody. In fact, if you do a YouTube search, it's Dick Slater and Bruiser Brody, but it turned out that gentleman Chris Adams and myself came in and we had a tag team match. And if you watch that match, you'll see Brody hit me with a chair. And when I tell you he hit me with that chair, I mean he blasted me. And then also you'll see a kick to the head in that match, which almost knocked me out. And then same thing with Abdullah. I mean, Abdullah, you know, these guys are big men. I remember Jerry Blackwell, Abdullah the Butcher, you know, they used to love to blow guys up. And I remember working that match that you just referred to. Abby and I were working somewhere in Atlanta at some theater, And Ron Simmons was actually in the crowd too. And anyway, we were all over the place, blood flying everywhere. I mean, Abby was hitting me with everything he can get his hands on. And the owner of the theater, he didn't know what to do. We wound up in the parking lot. Next thing I know, I see blue lights coming. Here comes the cops. And I'm going, oh, man, we're going to go to jail. So anyway, we worked back into the theater and went home safe and sound without getting locked up.
That's funny.
Now, what were your memories of working for the Worldwide Wrestling Federation?
You mean when it was the WWWF?
Yes, but like back in the 1970s.
Well, the business had territories then, and I, like I said, I was very young in the business. I know they had, I got to go do TV a couple times. And I just remember that, you know, that we would use local talent, and I would go in, sit down, shut up, and do what I was told to do. That's my memory of it. But you got to also understand that I was young, and I was starstruck. When I would walk into those locker rooms, you got to remember I was such a huge wrestling fan that it took me a long time. Well, in fact, I'll tell you how I stopped becoming starstruck. Jerry Blackwell finally grabbed me one day and said, Nick, we're all just one of the boys. And that's when it sunk in.
All right, so you're one of the you're on the very short list of wrestlers to work for both Vince McMahon Sr. and Jr. Can you just talk a little bit about the differences between them, maybe if either one of them was better than the other to work for?
I don't remember having any conversations with Senior at all. When the Bully was introduced and hit ESPN, it wasn't a week later that I got a call from New York. And next thing I know, I was on a plane and on my way to Vince's house. When I landed, my wife had told me that the Atlanta office, NWA, had called. Now, coming from the WWWF, I felt like I was home. When I got to Vince's house and we talked and we discussed, I just felt like I was home. And needless to say, I was anxious to work. You know, I wanted to work. The character, Vince loved the characterization, and he put me on the payroll immediately. I didn't have my first match for about 6 months after he put me on the contract.
Okay, and at this time when you were working for Vince Jr., that was a time where Bobby Heenan was not really a manager anymore. He was primarily an announcer, and you were paired with Harvey Whippleman. He was at the time he was really the primary heel manager. How did it feel to be paired with at that level with him, and just maybe a couple memories of just kind of spending time with him?
Well, I really didn't know Harv. Until we got up there, I knew he was friends with Sid, coming from Memphis. Sid and I were training partners, along with the Iron Sheik, and so they wanted to put him with somebody, and they did. And certainly, Big Bully Busick gave Harvey Whippleman the push that was needed to get him over.
Okay, and. Do you have any memories of wrestling Sid Justice?
Yeah, we did the when I was bullying McGurk, Mike McGurk in the ring, and then Sid come out and made the big save, and it was just a short-lived thing, and Sid did the big power slam, and for a 290-pound guy at the time, I come up pretty easy with that, didn't I?
I actually just recently saw that match. It was pretty good. Now, my next question for you is, you know, and we talked about this a little bit before we went on the air. You got the opportunity to work with some guys who passed before their prime, like Davey Boy Smith, a.k.a. the British Bulldog, and Kerry Von Erich. Got any memories you can share of working with those guys?
Oh, well, yeah, I do. I mean, Davey Boy, I could tell you, I would let him do a standing suplex with me on the concrete. That's how good he was. And Kerry was just what a super guy this guy was. When I broke in down in Dallas, his father was good enough to let Paducis and Plechich take me into the ring at the Sportatorium. And, you know, Kerry, both were class guys. I really enjoyed the time I got to work with them and be on the road with them.
Yeah, of course, they were both phenomenal athletes. Now, in 1991, you left the WWF. What was the reason behind that?
The main reason was my kids were starting to grow up, and I wanted to be with my family. I mean, that's the bottom line of it. It seems, you know, as I sit back and people with the entourage of the internet and doing interviews like this, certainly YouTube and the internet has resurrected a lot of guys like myself and actually brought the characters back to life. And, you know, when it comes to goal setting, I can distinctly remember before I went into the ring, before I actually was able to go in, I visualized myself in Madison Square Gardens. I distinctly remember this. And when that match was over with Kerry Von Erich, I remember coming out of the ring and saying, I'm done, that's it. So I didn't set my goals as high as I should have, but I remember saying, okay, I achieved what I wanted to achieve. And it was like I said, that's it, I'm done.
Now, of course, you know, you're still in phenomenal shape, of course, through your nutrition business. Have you ever thought about giving it one more run?
No, I haven't. I do a lot of strength training for some MMA guys, Mark Coleman's Hammer House. I train with those guys. I'm very active in youth and high school wrestling. In fact, I'm a high school wrestling referee. We have a gym here in Steubenville that has been deemed a regional Olympic training center, so we're getting ready to open that up. And so my focus is on that. My kids are grown up now. In fact, my oldest boy, he's going to be in Vegas here next weekend for the Police Olympics. He's going to be doing some submission wrestling. And the youngest boy, Bronco Busick, he's playing at West Virginia, middle linebacker.
Oh, wow, very cool. Now, you know, of course, you know, and I've brought this up a couple times, currently you own Big Bully Nutrition. Can you tell our listeners about this and what your motivation for starting it was?
I have a couple cardiologist friends that wanted to start this business, and so we had bought, there's a chain of fitness centers called LA Fitness, and inside LA Fitness they have a franchise cafe, which distributes protein shakes and all your nutritional stuff. And I had had a sudden death cardiac arrest on a treadmill, and so I just started researching a lot of these supplements. And I've been around it my entire life. I mean, we sat and figured, my boys and I, and they said, Dad, do you realize that you started this when you were 15 years old and you're 56 now? You average 3 to 4 times a week in the gym, and you haven't missed. So I've been around it forever, probably longer than you guys have been on planet Earth. And I still have a great passion for it. And so the sudden death cardiac arrest issue came up, and there's a lot of athletes are familiar with the stuff that's called nitric oxide, and that's a gas inside the blood that promotes circulation. Well, they also use it for heart conditions, and so what I did is I took that and I put it in a protein bar, and that'll be in your local GNC stores here first week in September. So here's a shameless plug. Walk into a GNC store, ask for the Bully's Nitric Oxide 5000 bar.
I'll definitely have to put that on our website and in the recap as well. One of our listeners, Wacko Bob, actually sent in a question of what is your memories of working with Mari Jannetty on the independent scene?
I got a chance to work with Mari and Shawn Michaels down in Georgia. They were certainly, their career was starting to peak. And we were at, I believe it was Marietta, Georgia. And it was one of the shows. Kurt Hennig was on the show, and Jerry Blackwell had the resources to bring in all the top names. So those guys, if you go back, they were, along with the Rock and Roll Express, that's when flying really started to happen in the business.
I would agree with you on that. Another question from one of our listeners is, do you have a river or road story you can share with our listeners?
Pardon me?
One of the questions that was sent in is, do you have a rib or a road story you can share with our listeners?
Let's see. There's so many of them, you sort of took me off balance on that one. Certainly my time with the Iron Sheik has always been nothing but favorable. How many times we've walked into a gym and, you know, the Sheik is so serious that if you were on a piece of equipment or something and you were just bullshitting, the Sheik would go off on somebody if you weren't in there training. So we had a lot of fun time with that. And there's a host. Mr. Wrestling, too, would be coming back from a road trip, and he wouldn't let guys out of the car to stop and use the restroom just to torture them. Dick Slater, there's another guy who just went out of his way to help me. And there's a host of stories, but they're all favorable.
Now, you actually, if I'm not mistaken, you just brought up Mr. Wrestling 2, who actually is currently in a hospital after suffering a heart attack.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, when was the last time you talked to him? Yeah, it was just reported a couple days ago that actually he was put into the hospital after having a serious heart attack. So.
Well, and maybe after the show, you can shoot me an email and give me some updates on that. Is he still in Hawaii?
No, actually, he's in Charlotte, North Carolina. The actual news, it says pro wrestling legend Mr. Wrestling 2 suffered a heart attack and is in the hospital. There's an address as well where you can send encouragement.
Well, good. I'll have to make sure I do that.
And, you know, we just have, like, one more question for you, and that's, what does the future hold for Big Bully Busick?
Well, right now, I'm chasing the youngest boy in the college football scene. I'll be watching that. He also has both boys have big wrestling backgrounds. He may jump back into the wrestling game because he's definitely a wrestler that's playing football. So I'll focus my attention on just being a dad and a fan of college football. Continue to do the strength training with what athletes I have and working with them, high school referee. My daughter's an animal control officer and a canine trainer. So, Big Bully Busick's life's filled up, chasing the wife around with no kids in the house. I get to play slap and tickle once in a while with her. She's probably going to kill me for saying that, but you know, she ran the roads so many years up and down, and always was a great encouragement. And I got to give her a big plug too, because when I told her that, look, if I'm going to make it in the business, I got to either get to the NWA. Or the WWF, and you know, she worked and supported us while I went out and worked all these independent shows in order to get my name out there. So, I got to give a big plug to her and the way she did things, feeding us. I know Sid and Sheik and myself would come home from the workouts, and she'd have a big meal prepared. And so, you know, I'm very active. I'm very, very active.
Now, do you still do appearances like, NWA Legends Fest, of course, does an annual thing. Do you ever do the autograph signings and stuff?
I did one, and I got a call here last month to go do another one. It seems as if the Big Bully character, although short-lived in the WWF, had a major impact. One fellow said, you know, for the shortest period of time had the biggest impact. And it really is amazing how many people do remember the Bully character, and that's why we just used the Bully characterization right along with our nutrition line, and you know the website's no5000.com, so you can see how we capitalized on the creation of the Bully and the likeness of such.
Well, I'd like to thank you for coming on, and, you know, once again, you know, I want to plug the Big Bully Nutrition. Of course, you gave out the website, and it's going to be in store soon, so fans got to definitely check that out. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, listen, thanks for having me, and well wishes to all the fans out there, and a special thank you, because if it wasn't for the fans, none of us would get to pursue our dreams that were in professional wrestling.
That is very true. Thank you once again.
Take care, guys.
All right, you too.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
While lesser designers would shy away from putting 300-pound men in spandex, you embrace it.
Yes, you do.
Pushing fashion to its limits, literally, you pair tights with a cape, a leotard with a mask, leather boots with a thong.
Oh, looking good.
All understated ways of saying, I'm going to rip your head off and look fabulous doing it. So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Guy, because without you, a man crushing another man's head in his arms would just look silly.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Design.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, this is Brother D-Law from TNA Wrestling. And you know something? When you're out there and you're thinking about choosing a wrestling school that really benefits you, that you want to see progress, and at the end of the day, you're going to feel happy about what you're doing, well, Team 3 Academy is just the place. Team 3 Academy offers you everything that you could possibly want in a wrestling school. It offers you old school rules with the new school tools. Team 3 Academy will offer you the best there is in teaching how to do professional wrestling the right way, the way it should be taught. Team 3 Academy also gives you the knowledge of behind the scenes and how to take care of yourself, conduct yourself in and out of the ring. Team 3 Academy at team3academy.com. So if you've always been a wrestling fan all your life, and you've always said, I can do that, then you owe it to yourself to come on down and have Bubba Ray and ourselves train you. Train you in the way that professional wrestling should be taught the right way. Again, Team 3D Academy offers you a variety of things. Team 3D Academy will give you the knowledge that you need to make you either TNA or WWE. Be sure to contact us. Be sure to make it happen for you. Testify.
Hi, this is Pete Gass, formerly of the Mean Street Posse, and you're listening to FalseCountRadio.com.
Gentlemen, welcome back to False Count Radio. The reason we just did the 10 bell is quite simple. False Count Radio has lost somebody close to our hearts today. About 3 a.m., our original webmaster, the owner of Thief by Design Web Graphics, Lee Miller Jr., passed away. It was an untimely death. Lee was at the age of 29 years old. And we here at False Count Radio family felt it was very necessary to do the 10 bell and honor him the way he should be honored. So that's the reason we did the 10 bell. And, you know, from all the fans and from all the boys on False Count Radio, we just wanted to send our condolences out to the family and friends of Lee Miller Jr. You know, the next topic we were going to discuss, though, is, and this is a very weird topic. I'm kind of surprised. A TNA wrestler, and I'm pretty sure I know who it is, and is actually continuing right now on Twitter, called TNA Anonymous, the TNA Anonymous, and I'll throw the link up in the chat room on Twitter. It's a very irate wrestler, and basically what they are doing is they've turned to Twitter. Originally they had a fake Hulk Hogan account, and they've turned to Twitter basically to shoot on what they think is going wrong with TNA. And I wanted to actually quote a couple of the things that they said, and I actually went ahead and sent them over to my co-host Andrew, and the two things were, and they were posted about 45 minutes ago, is the first one was, no, I am not on the house show loop right now, not until September, and that's part of the problem. That's large income lost. The second part to that was, we get paid per appearance. Sitting at home doesn't make me no money. Now, right away, that tends to send me over to thinking it's Samoa Joe angry about the way TNA is being ran. This superstar has gone as far as to saying that, you know, Dixie is in the wrong and it needs to go back to the old way, the way it was before 2007 in TNA Wrestling, and has gone as far as just saying that Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff are only there to collect paychecks. Now, I know you, Andrew, have a very strong opinion on TNA Wrestling, and I'm going to give you the floor to, you know, shoot if you want.
Well, I do have some very strong anti-TNA feelings. I've kind of gone off that a little while because I think I made my point to the people in TNA. Certain people know me by name from that, so I won't go too far into that. Just real quick, I am looking at this page as I'm going on, and it appears that there's a TN Angry, which is a fake version of this one. So there's a lot of crazy stuff going on there. There's Fuck Terry Taylor. One thing that leads me to believe that it's not Samoa Joe is he's talking about TNA, or she, he's talking about TNA from 2002 to 2006. It says those were the true TNA days when we were family. And Samoa Joe didn't show up in TNA until 2005. So possibly not Samoa Joe, but possibly just a ruse there. The way you say it is like I absolutely hate TNA and want them to go out of business, which is definitely not true. I would very much like to see them succeed. However, I don't think it's going to happen, especially when one of these saving graces was supposed to be Hardcore Justice this weekend, which was absolutely atrocious in my mind. There's just a few things that they can do to improve, and even if it's just on a financial aspect. I mean, I think I said this on one of the shows we did over the weekend. They spend $1.5 million signing guys like Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff, Ken Anderson, Jeff Hardy, all of these guys that they're signing. And what they were most concerned with was the ratings. Well, that didn't help the ratings. What's helped the ratings in the last few weeks is these quote-unquote, these are not my words, but words that have been spoken on several different other sites, washed-up ECW guys. You know, their ratings were close to 1.5, and they haven't had 1.5 since January 4th. So, I mean, to me, there's just a few things that they can do to to make their show a little bit better. You know, one thing they can do is they seem to be hemorrhaging money, like losing money left and right. They don't get many pay-per-view buys, and I think a large reason is because their pay-per-views are between $40 and $45. Just on that alone, I'm not going to buy their pay-per-view. I will pay $15 to $20 on a pay-per-view. Because really their pay-per-views are the best part. There's not as many storyline situations going on on the pay-per-view. So, I mean, it is about the best thing there. They do great on their house shows. I will say that. I've been to house shows. They're extremely interactive. They randomly choose fans to get to go backstage and meet all the wrestlers. They let fans go in and meet wrestlers and take pictures with the belt and all those sort of things. So that's a great thing there. Quite frankly, it's a terrible product, and they're trying to emulate WWE's product, which the one thing that made TNA great for so long was that they were an alternative. You had the X Division was the best thing they had going. AJ Styles is not a main eventer. I like AJ Styles, but I don't like what he's doing. He's not a main eventer, like I said. They're trying to basically squeeze every possible dime and bit of respect that we can have out of Ric Flair. They're recreating the Four Horsemen. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of died a little bit when I heard Ric Flair compare AJ Styles to Arn Anderson. You know, he was comparing Desmond Wolfe to Lex Luger and Kazarian to Barry Windham. It was just a really almost sacrilegious to me, to be honest with you. It was just, why are you comparing them to these people and you're using the same sign? You're basically trying to recreate the Four Horsemen with a group of guys that are not the Four Horsemen. There's just several things here, and I have the Dixie Carter shoot interview here. I'm going to watch it probably this weekend and then do a show where I can sort of put more information out there. One mistake that Dixie Carter makes is she's constantly out there. She's constantly on Facebook and Twitter, and basically, in a lot of ways, she's giving away storylines. Well, not every fan likes to be spoiled. Some people still like the surprise aspect of it. Just a very odd thing there. And to anyone out there in TNA who may be listening, again, I don't mean any disrespect by this. It's my personal feelings there. The other thing I want to talk about is they recently put out the PWI 500. And, you know, we all know that this is a kayfabe magazine. So, in previous years, guys like John Cena have been up there, Randy Orton, Triple H. I mean, it's all a kayfabe. But the top male wrestler in it this year is AJ Styles. The top female wrestler, because I guess now they do the male and female, is Michelle McCool. And that's what I really want to talk about here for a second. Michelle McCool is the number one women's wrestler, according to this magazine. Oh, Lord. I guess, she gets her way to the top a lot of times because of her relationship with The Undertaker. I wonder if that wouldn't happen I wonder if the magazine would be out of business if it wasn't for that. It's a little joke there, but not really good.
Here's one thing. I don't want to cut you off on your train of thought, but here's one thing, and I don't know if you know this, but ever since before I actually started wrestling, I even came across something. It's not on the PWI website anymore, but back in the day, there was a thing where it said if you sent in $20, your resume, and a highlight reel, that you would actually be in contention and there was a chance that you would be listed, which right there proved that PWI was a rigged magazine and that basically it was whoever paid the most, which if you pay attention, you know, honestly, of course, if you think rankings, name-wise, of course the WWE and TNA guys are going to be a higher ranking than stars, but wrestling ability-wise, and that's what PWI should be about, is the wrestling ability, not by the name draw. It should be by the wrestling ability. And I can tell you right now, 50,000 wrestlers that are way better than Michelle McCool, and I can also tell you probably about 50 to 75 wrestlers that can out-wrestle AJ Styles. So, you know, that's just one thing to think about with PWI, and another thing to think about with that is they're very biased. They also say, you know, nowadays they put on their website that if you want to be in the PWI, what you have to do is you have to have a promoter or somebody who has worked with you or a fan send in your information, and they'll review it. Now, what review means to them, if I'm not mistaken, and this is just kind of a feel I've gotten, is you send it in, we'll trash it. And then if you send in a little bribe, you know, maybe a $20 bill or something, then we'll consider it, which would be why a lot of guys that haven't left their area, and I'm not trying to shit on anybody, so if you're listening to this show, don't feel like I'm shitting on you, but people like Peter B. Beautiful and people like that are actually in PWI 500.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just it, because I'm looking at the list right now, and I'm just going to read off the top 10 and just note how many of these people do not work for WWE or TNA. You have AJ Styles, John Cena, CM Punk, Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, Batista, Shinsuke Nakamura, The Undertaker, Kurt Angle, and Sheamus. That's your top 10. I don't see, while I'm not a huge fan of his, I don't see Bryan Danielson until, first, I don't see Desmond Wolfe, who I personally think can work circles around any of those guys. His rank is 28. And actually,
really? 28?
Yeah, he's 28, and Bryan Danielson, he's listed as Daniel Bryan because of the time it came out, is listed at 44. They rank James Storm ahead of Bryan Danielson. To Desmond Wolfe, Desmond Wolfe is surrounded. The person ahead of one spot ahead of him is John Morrison. The person one spot below him is Ultimo Guerrero. Then Drew McIntyre and Samoa Joe. it's totally a kayfabe magazine, and I understand that. And I had heard that story about the fact that if you send in money and your information, they'll put you in there, basically selling bribes for it. But I also know of some independent wrestlers who have not done that but still wind up there simply because of name value out there. I remember as a teenager, I read this magazine religiously. I couldn't wait for the PWA 500. I wanted to look at it every year. I wanted to see who's number one, where my favorite wrestler is, and who's number 500.
Exactly.
Who barely made it. I remember one year, Duke the Dumpster Drosy was number 500. Somehow he got a job with the WWF at the time. A few months after that, after being ranked the 500th ranked wrestler in the world, according to Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Here's one thing funny, and I'm going to share a story. And there's a guy named Tony Kazina who's worked Ring of Honor, and he's a pretty well-known on the independent scene. Now, before I had wrestled, I was walking through Safeway, and we were buying groceries and stuff. And I remember seeing Tony come rushing into Safeway, like, in a hurry. Keep in mind, Tony's only, like, 5'4", so, for a little short guy to come running into a store, there's got to be a reason, right? Well, I walk down the magazine aisle, and I'm flipping through WWE magazine at this point. Well, at that point, it was WWF magazine. And all of a sudden, here comes Tony Kazina walking down the aisle. He grabs the magazine, looks at it, and goes, "Oh, I'm number 328. And he walks up, and he goes, "Okay, I'm leaving." And I go, "What, you're not going to buy the magazine?" He goes, "No, I have it ordered, or it's going to be shipped to me because I'm in it, but I just wanted to see what my listing was this year." Isn't that kind of sad that a guy would actually go to the store just to see what his listing was?
Right, yeah, like, if it was a legitimate thing where they actually ranked them based off talent, I could definitely understand that. If you just look at the history real quick, which I don't have in front of me, but 3 out of the last 4 years, I think John Cena was number one. I don't have any problem with John Cena. I definitely don't think he's the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah, exactly. John Cena is definitely not one of the best wrestlers in the world. Honestly, if you go back and you're watching old WWE stuff back, I can't remember the exact year, but it was a Velocity taping. There's an American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, and they called him the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, versus John Cena in John Cena's early stages. This was before John Cena was the little rapper, wigger kid, when he used to come out and he would wear the little biker shorts. Do you remember those days?
Yeah, I remember that, like, when he just came out, and he was, like, the I have ruthless aggression type of guy.
Honestly, I have to say that during that match, that was probably the best John Cena match I've ever seen on WWF or WWE television. Why? It wasn't because of John Cena, I can tell you that right now for sure.
Right. I mean, he was, I will say about him, he's improved tremendously since he first came in, which isn't really saying much, but he was absolutely terrible when he first came in.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Andrew, the other thing, and you brought up the PWI 500, is, the funny part about that is we've been listed in the PWI, which is kind of funny considering I've never sent anything into them, but it's cool that they actually pay attention to radio shows like that, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah, and that's what I don't want to do is I don't want to bash them because they've mentioned us, But, I mean, just knowing that they do, but that is how they base the PWI 500. And like I was saying, when I was younger, PWI was like gospel, when I believed in everything, So, I mean, obviously I'm talking when I was very little. I think it's just a difference in the days, too, because I remember when I was younger, when I knew the new Pro Wrestling Illustrated came out or whatever magazine, I'd go to school, do whatever, I'd get home, and then I'd go to the convenience store and I'd buy whatever wrestling magazines. I think those days are long gone.
Yeah, I would agree with you completely. Those days are long gone. I remember, and we had this conversation, you said you get WWE Magazine all the time. I used to get all the magazines, the PWIs, the WWE Magazine, WCW Magazine when it was around, and even the five ECW magazines that ever came out. I had those, and I still do somewhere. But no, the reason I stopped getting them was for the simple fact of my mailman was just careless with them. I mean, they'd come with, like, the friggin' cover ripped off or a hole in it or bent to shit, and I was just like, really? What's the point of me spending, you know, X amount of dollars a year to have these magazines as a collector's item and read them if they're going to get torn up in the mail? And it sucked. And then I also remember, you know, towards the end of my subscriptions, they started doing it to where there was five or six of the same magazine, but they changed the cover just so they could make more money off you. And I was, and at that time I was still young, so I was still going out there and I was buying every one. I have all of them from back when they had, it was like Terry Runnels, Tori, Lita, maybe? I don't remember. Jacqueline, I think, and a couple others. Do you remember those?
Yeah. I think one of them was Trish Stratus.
Yep. You know, those were the days of wrestling, though. Those and the late 80s, early 90s, honestly, in my opinion. Even WCW had a good product back in the day. Not in 2001, but back in the day.
Yeah. I'm a little bit older than you, so I'm old enough to vaguely remember Andre the Giant Hulk Hogan feud. So, you know, just things like that I kind of have that memory of. So, yeah, I'll say that the late 90s and the mid to late 80s were probably the two, I mean, definitely were the two best eras. Having said that, sometimes I like to go back and I like to look at the total clusterfuck that the early 90s WCW was. Because, like, you look at the production values and it's so horrible, it's actually a little bit entertaining.
Yeah. I agree with you completely on that, man. You know, the production value of WCW was treacherous towards the end. I mean, you had so many different people. Plus, you know, and here's one thing, you know, and I hate to say it, but nowadays you've got Ring of Honor, TNA, and WWE, okay? I wouldn't even classify, and if you were to stay here and go, oh, well, you know, back in the day there was three companies, WCW, WWE, and, you know, of course, ECW. I wouldn't say WCW, WWE, and ECW, you know, those were the three competitors now, but then you've got fans nowadays that go, oh, the three competitors are WWE, then TNA, then Ring of Honor. In my opinion, Ring of Honor is a new wannabe ECW, and the reason I say that is they focus on the strong competition of wrestling, and not only do they focus on the strong competition of wrestling, but they also, at the same point, they've still got that, when ECW first started, it was kind of a cult following. Then they got a national following, and then they got a global following. They're still at that cult following stage as far as Ring of Honor is concerned, in my opinion.
Right, yeah, and I mean, like, ECW's global following, actually, I don't think that came till after it went out of business. It was once WWE started putting out the DVDs, things like that, that a lot of people who would pretty much buy any video that WWE would put out would see that and, you know, be like, this is ECW. Why did I never watch this when it was on? If you look at it when you had WWE, WCW, and ECW, then you look at it today. I look at it like this. There's no WWE. WWE now is WCW. And then pretty much TNA and Ring of Honor are combined might make an ECW. And, you know, the reason for that is kind of like you said with the wannabe, it seems like the fans in both audiences, they just want to kind of make those, they want to have that feel in it, which it really isn't. I will say that TNA on this past pay-per-view did a really good job of making their arena look like an ECW arena with the barely lit arena and the way that they basically redid their arena. And TNA fans do the same thing. For instance, the other night, Rob Van Dam and Sabu, the bell had just rung, and the fans were chanting, this is awesome. Well, how do you know if you haven't seen anything of it yet? And it kind of didn't turn out to be because, you know, just the way it was. But I think the fans have something to do with it, you know. But
I would agree with you to a point. You know, the fans have something to do with it, but the whole pay-per-view, and, you know, we did this on the recap show, so I don't want to go too far into it, but the problem with the pay-per-view was that it had the ECW feel, but it didn't. Me and Gary Wolf actually talked about this earlier today. You know, how can you run an ECW-style pay-per-view but say, oh, if Justin Credible hits him with a kendo stick, he's disqualified? You can't do that. When ECW was around, there was no DQs.
And here's the one thing I didn't mention when we were on the air the other night about that, that when I thought about it more, it really bothered me. You had someone pretending to be the Blue Meanie, and yet someone pretending to be Raven's lackey, Lupus. That's the equivalent of having Kane dress up as Diesel. it's
or Brian
not,
Lee.
Right, or Brian. Yeah, and not Brian Lee being the fake Undertaker when the Undertaker got hurt, and Brian Lee was there, and we were supposed to believe that that was Mark Callis. Mark Calloway. That's not possible. So I looked at it, I'm like, it's not the Undertaker. Are they doing this stupid storyline again? But it was just, and granted, the Blue Meanie and Lupus weren't the biggest stars. It's not like someone came out dressed as Sandman or something like that. But it just, like, to me, it just kind of insults the fans' intelligence, because you obviously knew that that was not the Blue Meanie. Lupus, they actually fooled me on that.
Really?
Because when he jumped in, it was, you didn't really see his face, and you just saw what he was wearing, kind of looked alike, and that end, I wasn't really paying that much attention to him.
You know, honestly, I don't even know who Lupus was, honestly. I remember watching ECW, but I might not have been there for the stages of that, but I do remember, you know, and real quick, I'm actually going to put the APB out. We have fans out there that, you know, help the show and trying to find people. I'm trying to figure out, you know, where a couple different people are, and we're going to post those on the Facebook page as to where a couple different people are. So if you can help us try and track them down, that would be awesome. So, you know, we just got a couple more minutes left. I do want to plug that this Friday we are going to be doing a special episode. It's going to be a replay of one of our lost archives. What we are calling is the False Count Radio Presents the Lost Tapes. This time we're going to be doing the Jimmy Rave interview. So if you're a fan of Jimmy Rave and you want to hear what Jimmy Rave had to say, this was done briefly after he had left TNA Wrestling. And he's very open-minded during the interview and shares a lot of insider details. You can definitely do that. We're going to be playing that on Friday. And we will not only be playing that on Friday, but we will also, and I got to say it just like this, we will also be streaming it on placeswithfriends.com down the line. Today we're actually on placeswithfriends.com, but not live. They're actually playing one of our tribute shows. So with that being said, you know, we just got a couple more minutes left. And my closing thoughts, I just want to say that stay tuned, keep your eyes open. There's going to be something big going on with False Count Radio in the few weeks coming up. So, you know, anything left with you, Andrew, you want to say?
No, just let the fans know we'll be doing a recap after SummerSlam this weekend. And, you know, I don't know if we have anyone booked for Saturday, but definitely looking forward to our Saturday show as well.
Yeah, of course. Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, False Count Radio will be back live. But don't forget to check out the Jimmy Rave interview that we did in the past that's going to be played, called The Lost Archives or The Lost Tapes. That will be played on Friday. We'll be announcing the time and everything on the Facebook page. Facebook.com, go up to the search tab, type in False Count Radio, it'll pop up, or you can just simply head on over to falsecountradio.com, and when you are on there, all the information will be promoted on the website. With that being said, on behalf of Andrew Carluck, our guest Big Bully Busick, I am the Pacific Coast player JT Evans, saying as of September, head on out to your local nutrition store and get one of those Big Bully nutrition bars. And other than that, just stay safe and have a good night, and we'll see you back here live on Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Music. Reality. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. But we as entertainers have a responsibility to these kids. Psych.
If I were to die murdered in cold blood tomorrow, would you feel sorry or show love, or would it matter? Could never be the leader or batter if things shit for me to feed off. I'm seesaw battling, but there's way too much at stake for me to be fake. There's too much on my plate. I done came way too far in this game to turn and walk away and not say what I got to say. What the fuck you take me for? A joke? You smoking crack? Before I do that, I beg Mariah to take me back. I'll get up before I get down, run myself in the ground before I put some wax it out. I'm trying to smack this one out the park, 5,000 mark. Y'all steady trying to drown the shark. Ain't gonna do nothing but piss me off.
way I'm leaving this bitch is suicide. I have died clinically. I ride back at my enemy's crib with Hennessy. Got drunk, then I finished it. I'm every nigga's favorite arch enemy. Physically fitted to be the most dangerous nigga with beef. I spark willingly with a Dillinger in the dark diligently. I'm not what you think. I appear to be fucked up, mentally endangered. I can't stay away from a razor. I just want my face in a paper. I wish a nigga had a grenade to squeeze tight to await neighbors for acres. I murder you. I gauge and have me turn into a madman. Son of Sam, bitch, I'm surgical. I'm allergic to dying. You think not? You got balls? We can see how large. When I'm using
I was happy having a deal at first. Thought money would make me happy, but it only made my pain worse. It hurts when you see your friends turn their back on you, dog. And you ain't got nothing left but your word and your balls. And you stretch from the calls of your new friends begging with their hands out. Checking for your record when it's selling. When it ain't, that's the end. No laughs, no friends, no girls. That's the gin you drink till your car spin. You think, damn. You slam into the wall and you fall out the car and try to crawl with one arm. I'm about to lose it all in a pool of alcohol. If my funeral's tomorrow, wonder would they even call when the music
high. Your men loyal. When I pull up looking for you with a pistol, sipping a can of Pennzoil. I'm revved up. Who said what with lead bust? Your head just explode with red stuff. I'm handcuffed, tossed in a paddy wagon, bragging about how you shouted like a coward. Bullets devoured you, showered you niggas. If I was you niggas, I'd run while giving a chance. Understand, I can enhance the spirit of man. Death itself, it can't hurt me. Just the thought of dying alone that really irks me. You ain't worthy to speak thoughts of cheap talk. Be smart and stop trying to walk how G's walk before we spark. Hug the floor while we playing tug of war with your life. Fuck the tour on the mic, I'd rather fuck a whore with a knife. Deliver that shit that coroner's like. You hype popping shit in broad daylight. Nigga, you a goner in a mind to stop.
Instigators, turn pits in cages. Let loose and bit the neighbors, wrist the razors. Y'all don't want war, y'all want talk. In the dark, my dogs all bark like hoofs. Wolf, nigga, I'm a wolf. Get your whole roof, caved in like reindeer hoofs. Stomp the boots, shake the floor tiles loose. The more y'all breach, the more rhyme moves. This is Hill Street, this is hardcore blues. Put a gun to rap, checking all our dudes. Or make the news, bet your all y'all move. When the Uzi pop, you better drop when the music stops.
Music has changed my life in so many ways. Brains confused and fucked since the fifth grade. LL told me to rock the bells. NWA said fuck the police. Now I'm in jail. 93 was strictly R&B. Fucked up haircut, listen to Jodeci. Michael Jackson, who gon' tell me I ain't Mike? Ass cheeks painted white, fucking Priscilla tonight. Flying down Sunset, smoking crack. Transvestite in the front, Eddie Murphy in the back. M.O.P. had me grimy and gritty. Marilyn Manson, I dyed my hair blue and grew some titty. Ludacris told me to throw them bowls. Now I'm in the hospital with a broken nose and a fractured elbow. Voices in my head, I'm going in shock. I'm reaching for the clock, but the music stops.